Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now it's time for a love story for the ages, not just for Christmas, because Emma Hetherington, the international best-selling author known for writing about life-affirming issues combined with heartwarming romance, has just released her latest page-turner, Maybe Next Christmas. It's a beautifully written will-they-won't-they love story with surprising twists. But its release also comes at a time when very real-life health challenges face the author. So to discuss strength, resilience and the complexities of Christmas, Emma Hetherington joins me now on the line. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Claire. Good morning.
Lovely to talk to you. And I have been reading your book. I've been following you on Instagram and wondering, how is she doing this? Will you tell our listeners what's happening to you?
Well, I'm speaking to you today from my hospital bed in Belfast City Hospital, where I'm being treated for blood cancer. I was diagnosed back in March, beginning of March, and I've had 6 months of chemo, and then this is the last huge hurdle. I'm having a stem cell transplant today. So when we're finished talking, it's all systems go here, and I will be getting my stem cells back, hopefully to give me some sort of remission from this very challenging, incurable disease.
So that's happening to you today?
Yes, at about 11 a.m. So
incredible.
Very soon.
So tell us how you've been then. I've been looking at you over the weekend. You had your children in, and you had the ceremonial head shave, which they all helped you with.
Yes, that was totally unplanned. So one of the biggest dreads, I suppose, as superficial as it might seem to others, for me was losing my hair, and I was afraid of how the children would react. And when I say children, we have four young adults and a 10-year-old. So maybe the 10-year-old, you know, I was really worried about how it might frighten him. So they came in to visit me on Saturday. Now, as of today, I'm not allowed any visitors for the next 6 weeks. I'm going to be in isolation. So they came in on Saturday, and I just suggested off the cuff, and they all brightened up. They got the kit from the nurses here, and we made it into a really, really fun thing to do together, and took away all that fear, and they were delighted. They thought it suited it, and they went away a wee bit happier, I think, a wee bit more content, you know, and took away that fear.
So the next 6 weeks then, you won't be allowed to have any contact with your family. Will they be able to come in and wave at you through the glass?
No, the way that the ward is set up here, you know, I'm behind two double doors. I'm in a small side room. I've got everything I need, don't get me wrong, and views over Belfast City, which are spectacular. But I'm allowed one nominated visitor the whole time, and that person can't change. So the way I'm going to work it, I think, is just like if and when I need someone, I'll call him. You know, that'll be my partner, Jim. He'll be that nominated person, but I want him to focus on what's going on at home more so, and because I'm being very well looked after here.
Yeah, gosh, it's an incredibly challenging time for you, Emma.
It is, and it just failed just at a time when, again, I should be in another realm. I would be reaping the rewards of all the hard work that goes into writing a novel. I should be out seeing it on the shelves. I'm not going to see this book at all on the shelves because it's a Christmas story. It'll be off the shelves by the time I'm better enough to be going out and about. Mm-hmm. So readers and booksellers have been so kind, and they've been tagging me in photographs when they see the book, you know, on the shelves, and that's really helping.
Yeah, and your family have been out and about, and they've been sort of substituting for you in the shops, haven't they?
Yes, my daughter, Jordan, my eldest girl, she was selling books for me at the weekend there, signed copies. Jim McKee, my partner's an artist, and he has an art gallery in our village of Donoughmore. So she set up a shop in there, like a pop-up bookshop, and she's been selling them signed copies. So that keeps them busy as well, and it takes their mind off all the other gory stuff that we're facing at the minute as a family.
Mm-hmm. And had you the book finished when you got the diagnosis in March?
No, I didn't. No, I had a bit of a rough draft done, but myself and my agent and publisher were, I suppose, you know, the first draft always only a first draft, or thinking of how we're going to make it better. And so I had to get stuck into, you know, make the polish and like, every brick goes through two or three rounds at least of edits. So I had all that to do, and it brought lots of changes to the story because obviously my own headspace was very different then. And I always find that in my books, I try to pour in the emotion that I'm feeling without it having to be necessarily what I'm going through. So sometimes hard times make for a better story.
Mm-hmm. But you had you found that you had the energy and your health allowed you to do what you needed to do from March up to when you had it put to bed.
Well, I have to say that my publishers really did have a lot of patience. You know, they let me run up to the very, very last minute with this one. So it was running very close to publication, the ebook publication date, which was the end of August. So I was working on it right up until maybe July. So it was all very last minute, but we did get it done. And there are parts of the book I look back on and I read and I can't even remember writing it.
Right.
I'm delighted with it, but I'm saying, gosh, I don't remember writing that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were days when maybe I was writing it for cathartic reasons. You know, I think writing is great therapy, and it was a way of me escaping. You know, I could delve into the story and escape with what was going on in my real life.
Mm. How did you know that initially that there was something wrong before you had the diagnosis?
If we go back to about February 23, I had a very severe incident of severe dizziness. And know what I say, dizziness, you think of maybe the room spinning a wee bit. This was so bad I couldn't lift my head. So I was taken by ambulance to hospital, where I was given a CT scan, and the brain was clear. So I was sent home with no real answers. And then a couple of more incidents like that took me up to February of this year, so a year exactly later. And another scenario where I just knew there's something going on in my head that wasn't right. And another CT scan, the doctor there compared the two, you know, the year apart, and she saw there was a lesion in my bone skull bone, that of course you can't see from the outside or feel from the outside. But she ordered tests, blood tests, and the blood tests confirmed then that it was a blood cancer called multiple myeloma. And then a further PET scan showed that I had lesions in my sternum, two quite nasty ones there, and another one in my shoulder on the right side and another on the left shoulder blade. So I was becoming quite riddled with bone holes in the bones, that this cancer eats at the bone marrow. I also had a very strange sensation in my chest bone, where if I reached up high for something or moved quickly, even in bed at night, I would notice that there was something quite not right with that bone.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things you just put off, you know, and you just think, well, I'll deal with that later, or I'll see if it happens again. But yeah, sure enough, that's what was going on. So every time I was feeling that, it was like a fracture. So it was quite serious.
And have you been able to absorb the diagnosis, do you feel?
There are moments when, and even here now when I'm at this stage, you know, whenever I'm in the hospital and the world is going on outside of it without me, and I think, is this real? Is this really happening to me? And is this really happened to my family? There are moments that it all feels just so surreal, and I look back and I think, how did we get this far even? You know, if I think back to that day in March when I was diagnosed, 8th of March, how do we get from there to here? I think it's remarkable how we can deal with stuff when we have to.
And what's the hope then when it comes to what the treatment you're having today, the stem cell treatment?
Yeah, yesterday I had a very toxic blast of extremely strong chemotherapy, which is going to kill everything that's left basically in its path. So the aim is now I get my stem cells back today. So I had them moved a couple of weeks ago, so I'll get them back today, and it'll take me about 6 weeks then to recover from those two procedures, because they bring on severe sickness, risks of sepsis, risks of intensive care. I have a long road ahead, but after that, the hope is that it's all worth it and it will put me into some sort of lengthy remission. before the cancer comes back, because it will come back. It's an incurable cancer and it will come back. But hopefully this is my best chance of a few years, hopefully, of peace without it.
You're remarkable to be even talking to us today.
I know the nurses here have been absolutely amazing. You know, they have accommodated us very well this morning by, you know, making sure there's no bleepers going off the side of me here. I'm hooked up to a couple of things here on drips, on my pre-meds, and they did warn that one of them might make me a bit dopey. So if I'm hoping to, I'm making sense.
You're making absolute sense, and you're a marvel. You really are, given what you're going through and what you're facing. In the next hour, might remind people. Listen, Emma, let's talk about the book, because it is a modern Christmas classic. It all begins with this chance encounter in Heathrow Airport on Christmas Eve. Two Irish people travelling home for the festivities. They're almost late for their flights. They're running through the usual conditions that you would expect in London. Will you tell us a little bit about those two central characters?
Yeah, so Ollie, who is our main man, Ollie is from Teelin in Donegal, and he lives in London where he works as a nurse in the cardiac ward. He's very, very popular in his job, and he meets all sorts of characters and brings a lot of joy to them. Then we have Bea, who's short for Beatrice. She is from Benburb in my home county of Tyrone. And she is working in London as a front of house of a very, very plush Kensington hotel. She absolutely loves her job. She's going home for Christmas with a bit of a heavy heart, because she is planning on ending her 7-year relationship with Sean, who she still loves, but she's just not in love with him anymore. And I think a lot of people have been in those scenarios.
Yeah, poor Sean. You have the feeling reading her journey home, and she's writing down what she's going to say and how she feels about it. This sense of foreboding for poor old Sean. And we get the sense that Sean's actually a decent skin, but he has it coming at Christmas, doesn't he?
Yes, I know. And like I say, every breakup isn't because someone's bad. And so he's not a bad person at all. It's just that she sees her life going down a different path to what he's maybe planning. So that's her dilemma. And then with Ollie, he's going home for Christmas, knowing that it's going to be the last Christmas he has with his terminally ill father. So both of them are heading home for very different reasons. But of course, we have all the joy of Christmas going on around this. And again, that's reality for a lot of people. You know, everyone faces a different Christmas every single year. So they are thrown together when this flight is slightly delayed, to share a table in a very packed bar. And they end up having a conversation that changes both of their outlooks in life. And they know that they will really, really want to see each other again. Mm-hmm. But they don't know how.
And there is that central message of living for today, you know, that sense of resilience to deal with what life throws at you. And I wonder, when you were doing the rewrites, did you focus a lot more on that message?
Yes, and that's the magic of writing a novel. I think, you know, when you go back over rewrites, things do come to you that maybe you didn't think of in the first go. Well, obviously, I was in a very different frame of mind when I was doing these edits. So I was very much dealing with this diagnosis, dealing with the fact that it's incurable, that it's never going to go away. And I started thinking of all the things that I have wanted to do in my life that I haven't. And I'm talking about, like, from the most simple things to the most, you know, the biggest dreams of traveling somewhere. So that message of living in the moment really came through strong for me. And it was a case of, if you want to do something, you know, act on it now and make those plans, because none of us know what's around the corner.
So what are the things that you want to do then, Emma?
One of the things I want to do is go to Nashville next year. I'm really hoping to go to Nashville. One of my childhood dreams was to be a songwriter over in Nashville. So I just want to go over and absorb all that music that I've heard about so long. We're also hoping to get a big family holiday together. One of those big, you know, where we have to hire out a big place, and there's so many of us.
Yeah.
So I would love to do that. And then a few of my friends are turning big birthdays. My sister's turning 40 next year, and my cousin is turning 50. So just looking forward to cherishing celebrations like that. Where sometimes, you know, we think these these things are going to be forever. Well, I have learned they're not going to be, so embrace them all.
You've been forced to think about this now, so you know your message to people really is, don't put off the things that you really wanted to do or have a hankering after. Just do those things now. Carve out the time.
Yes, and it could be as simple as saying something, you know, to someone. You know, if you love someone, tell them. You know, I just think that it puts everything into perspective, and it's really a diagnosis like this really humbles you and makes you see what is important in your life, and sometimes the things you thought were important really aren't.
Look, Emma, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we're getting so many messages in from listeners who say you're a brave cookie and a warrior, and another that wants to make sure that your book is a bestseller this Christmas. And I really hope for you and your family that it is. Can I just wish you the very best of luck with everything that you're going through today and over the next couple of weeks? I know it'll be a tough time, but you've got the stuff to deal with it. There's no doubt about that. Emma Hetherington's book is called Maybe Next Christmas, and it is out now. We'll take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.